Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Hidden World by Melinda Snodgrass, narrated by Nicole Poole. 1. We were going to be rich.
Of course it would be you looting the dead. You always were a jackal.
And the day had started out so well, thought Oliver Xavier Randall, who hadn't begun life with that appellation.
You know this person, Admiral?
Asked one of the suited figures standing at the side of Beauregard Honorius Sinclair Cullen, the Duke de Argento y Pepco, royal consort to the Infanta, Mercedes Adelina Saturnina Inez de Arango, heir to the Solar League. Oliver felt the eyes of his crew upon him, and he was pretty sure that Dax and Dahlia were goggling at the radio aboard the ship. It was going to be an unpleasant conversation when they demanded an explanation about why he had lied to them for all these years. Oliver wondered why the universe hated him, because clearly it did. Thus far, the only positive out of this shit sandwich was the fact his crew had not recognized the suited figure as the Imperial consort. Squaring his shoulders, Oliver forced himself to look up and defiantly meet the gaze of the man behind the helmet's faceplate. The fact that Cullen topped him by 4 inches and was Vidstream star handsome and didn't seem to have aged a day since the last time they'd met and was now a vice admiral just added to Oliver's sense of ill usage.
Believe it or not, Lieutenant, this intitulado was once an officer in the Orden de la Estrella,
Cullen said.
I attended the high ground with him.
Cullen gave a theatrical sigh.
Further proof that the Academy and the Officers' Corps is no place for commoners.
Behind Oliver loomed a massive abandoned spaceship resting on the rock and ice surface of a medium-sized asteroid in a worthless solar system that lacked any viable planets and was so far off the beaten path that the arrival of an Imperial ship, much less a squadron, was so improbable as to be impossible. Which proved Oliver's point about the universe hating him. The members of Oliver's crew who had been busily removing the cargo from the derelict ship and onto a loader from their own, far smaller ship, were gathered protectively around the machine and the looted, appropriated, Oliver amended, goods.
We'll be taking custody of that,
Cullen said with a wave at the loader. Oliver inclined his head. He was damned if he'd bow. Over the radio came a murmur of objection from his crew. Oliver gestured with just the fingers of his gloved left hand. Shut up. He swallowed his rage. It went down like glass shards.
Of course, Your Grace.
Cullen gestured to one of his fusileros. The man climbed up into the cab and jerked a thumb at Luis Baca, who had been driving. The man climbed slowly down. Oliver and his crew watched as the loader rolled away toward the open doors of a waiting military shuttle.
We were going to be rich,
Luis said mournfully. Hours earlier, Luis Baca had caroled,
We're going to be rich!
As they stood staring up at the massive abandoned spaceship. Oliver could understand his crew members' excitement. The previous owners of this ship, the Karaot, had been master traders, carrying only the most expensive and unusual items for trade. Unique jewels, Sidon spider silk weavings, objets d'art, rare books, antiques, and medicines manufactured in the shipboard labs. It was the medicines that were most precious, but also problematic. In addition to being traders, the enigmatic Karaot had been masters of genetic engineering, and the major thing they wanted in trade was DNA from every creature, sentient or not, that they came across. When humans had finally figured out how to transcend light speed, they discovered, to their horror, they were not the ultimate creation in the universe. True to form, Oliver's species had attacked and conquered every other known race, founded the Solar League, and wanted no part of the Karaot's genetic shenanigans. There was no way the perfection that was humanity was going to be contaminated with alien cooties. Especially when the aliens in question had no standard body type or gender. The Kara'at could continue to distort their own corrupted bodies, but they were outlawed from doing so to any other race now under the sway of the Human League, and the punishment for appropriating human DNA was death. The paranoia was so great that it ended up extending even to the Kara'at mastery of medicine. Once Oliver had shared the disgust and fear of the Kara'at, but ultimately he decided the ban was absurd. And it wasn't just because he and his crew made a lot of money smuggling black market medicines. Fortunately, there were places unknown to the League and beyond the reach of Imperial law enforcement that didn't share the League's obsession with a now-vanished Kara'at. The crew of the Selkie could sell the drugs they would loot from the abandoned vessel to hidden worlds and on the black market. Yup, they were going to be rich. Oliver's gaze raked the length of the massive ship as it lay against the wall of an ice-rimmed crater. The Kara'at ship made his own ship, the Selkie, look like a child's toy. Oliver couldn't decide if the derelict was more reminiscent of a fallen skyscraper or a beached whale. He decided skyscraper, for it seemed to be studded with lights and ports, all dark now, and there were strange superstructures which looked like balconies, whose function he couldn't even begin to guess.
Still, you'd think the damn aliens would have been a bit more considerate and abandoned their ships in more pleasant places,
Luis added.
Why not a tropical paradise?
Perhaps we aliens enjoy making life miserable for humans,
Grarak said. The words were punctuated with clicks from her beak. It was odd for the spider-like alien to make a sassy remark, and it amused Oliver. He tried to stifle his chuckle, but it carried over the helmet radio, and Luis gave an exasperated sigh and turned to look at him. Even through the faceplate, Oliver could see the et tu expression on his comm officer's face.
Really, hombre? I get no support from a fellow human?
Luis asked.
You might notice we're, like, really outnumbered.
And one of those aliens, who outnumber you, thinks you humans could maybe stop chattering so we can crack open this treasure box?
Dahlia, their ship doctor, radioed from the ship. Oliver figured the gentle, sweet-faced Hajin would be eager to get her hands on the medicines.
I would second that request,
came the fluting tones of Jax over their suit radios. The Tiponi flute wasn't much use when it came to hauling heavy objects, given that he looked like an attenuated stalk of bamboo with agile but fragile fronds for appendages. He had remained on the ship with Dahlia. Oliver glanced back to where his ship rested on a flat, methane ice-coated plain. Despite the name, his ship wasn't a graceful beauty. It was squat and broad, the outer hull pitted in places and patched in others. She was a truck, designed to carry goods while keeping air inside so the inhabitants could survive as they made their way between worlds with those trade goods. Still, she was his, or at least three-quarters of it was his. A blown fold converter 6 years ago had necessitated that he sell shares to cover the repair costs. Jax had been the only buyer of the shares, and it had worked out. The Tiponi flute had integrated smoothly with the rest of the crew, and Oliver was grateful not to have to manage the books any longer. Math had always been his best subject in school, but he hated double-entry accounting, and Jax lived for it. The Tiponi had also improved profit margins with his wise and detailed choices of cargo. Oliver could have bought the alien out a few years back, but the flute was one of them now, sharing in the profits and the losses. But today was going to be a giant payday. A dark figure raced across the hull of the abandoned ship. Jahan's tail was held stiffly upright, a sure sign of excitement, and she had dropped to all fours for better purchase on the ice-rimmed hull. She launched herself off the ship, and almost too late, Oliver realized she was heading straight for him. He braced, and she hit his chest. He clutched at his second-in-command, and her suited arms clasped around his neck. The force of her landing sent him sliding backward across the ice. He managed to keep upright, but just barely. Their faceplates were only inches apart. Large neotenous dark eyes, golden fur-covered face, with a darker fur on her head that formed a widow's peak. Her lips parted in a smile, revealing the sharp canines of her species.
Madre de Dios, John!
Oliver exploded.
What if I hadn't caught you? You could have damaged your suit.
A new thought intruded.
For that matter, you could have damaged my suit if you'd knocked me down.
He added aggrievedly.
These aren't military grade.
I had faith in your elite military training.
He set her on her feet. She wasn't quite 4 feet tall, and he felt like an indulgent parent as he looked down at her.
Over a decade ago.
So you're saying you're fat and flabby now?
There's a fortune waiting. Can we get to it?
Baca exploded.
What did you find?
Oliver asked the executive officer.
Airlocks are on the side facing the crater wall. Outer doors are locked open. No indication anybody's been inside before us.
Did I mention we're going to be rich?
Baca said.
Several times,
Oliver said dryly. Jahan continued.
It's tight on that other side. They must have been really skinny or just left with the suits on their backs. It would be easier to offload the cargo on this side, and it's closer to the Selkie.
So we cut,
Rarak hissed. By now they had reached the side of the ship. Oliver craned his head to look up the towering metal.
Well, that's going to be a bitch. It took 3 missiles hitting pretty much at the same point to breach the hull on Kara'at ships during the expansion wars.
And there's that military background again,
Jahan whispered to Grarak, who giggled. It should have been disconcerting for Oliver, emerging as it did from a 5.5-foot-tall spider, but the fact that it wasn't indicated how comfortable he had become serving with aliens.
Be easier to cut at the ports,
Oliver said, trying to ignore the two aliens.
Go get the loader,
he ordered. Baca went loping away in long floating jumps in the low gravity.
And don't forget the torch,
Jahan yelled after him. He waved to indicate he wouldn't. While they waited, Oliver took a sip of water from the nipple in his helmet. He was trying to tamp down his excitement, but wasn't having a lot of success. It took a long time to cut a sufficiently large opening in the ship's side, long enough that they'd had to replace oxygen canisters in their suits.
So, what are you going to do with your share, Captain?
Luis asked as he braced the torch against his thigh. Blobs of molten metal fell like steel tears onto the platform of the loader. I'm going to pay off the bogus debt that I owe the Orden de la Estrella so I can get home and see my father. But Oliver said none of that.
Not sure. Maybe replace the starboard engine on the Selkie.
If this is as good as we expect, you can buy a new ship, Jahan said.
Grarak gasped.
Sell the Selkie? I hope she didn't hear you say that.
Jahan and Oliver exchanged glances. The Sidon navigator's habit of anthropomorphizing the freighter was a source of fond amusement to her crewmates.
Hey, hombre, I'm flagging here.
Oliver took over the torch from Luis and checked the fuel.
Getting low here.
Grarak swarmed up the struts to the platform carrying a fuel canister in one of her 8 claws. As she snapped it into place, she asked,
Why did they do it?
Who?
The Kara'at,
the spider replied.
Do what? Disappear?
She nodded.
Yeah, that. Abandon everything? Vanish?
To make us crazy?
Baca said.
Shit, I got called up because the Emperor and Otrel got their panties in a wad. They were sure the war was starting again. And then they extended my tour. Had to spend an extra 3 years humping a rifle.
That must have been uncomfortable,
Jahan said blandly.
Not humping like humping, you know, sex humping.
One never knows with you creatures,
the Asanjo smirked.
Seriously, do you know, Captain?
Grarak pressed.
I have a theory,
Oliver said slowly. Memory fled back 15 years.
standing in a warehouse while a half-human, half-Kara'at child had clung to his leg. He snapped off the torch and set it aside.
The Kara'at broke the genetic laws. They convinced some humans to mix DNA, and they produced alien-human hybrids. When a human governor arrived to take over the planet, the children were discovered, and he ordered them killed.
Killed?
It was Dahlia. She had obviously been listening in on their conversation from the ship. Horror laced the single word.
I never heard about this,
Louise said skeptically. Oliver struggled to keep his tone neutral as he said,
The crown covered it up.
Then how do you know? Jahan asked. She was perched on the top of the ship, and she peered over the curving edge at him. In her spacesuit, she looked like a robot gargoyle.
Because I was there.
He cleared his throat and grabbed up the torch again.
Let's get this thing open.
Jax's voice came fluting over the radio.
Did you kill children?
No!
A single explosive word. Oliver snapped on the cutter. I killed human soldiers to save them and ruined my life. A few minutes later, he was able to deliver a hard kick to the metal, and it fell into the ship. He felt the concussion as it hit through the soles of his boots. There wasn't enough atmosphere on this rock to carry any sound. Interior atmosphere puffed out, occluded his faceplate for an instant, then turned to snow and drifted toward the stony ground. After that, they split up and began looting. Salvaging, Oliver amended, the alien ship. And now he stood watching their gigantic payday vanish into an Otrell shuttle. Cullen smiled as he correctly interpreted Oliver's expression.
Be glad I'm not arresting you all and seizing your ship,
Cullen said. Which begged the question, why wasn't Cullen arresting them? The answer arrived with blinding force. Because he intends to keep it for himself, son of a bitch! Oliver's gloved hands balled into fists, the words, you fucking asshole, battered at the back of his teeth, and he pictured his fist driving into the faceplate, cracks appearing, Cullen choking and dying. Mercifully, his thinking head decided to take over from his desire to measure dicks. Oliver briefly closed his eyes and heard his father's voice urging him to show civility and courtesy at all times to his betters. He bowed and managed to grit out,
Thank you, sir.
Still too proud. Whine, Belmanor. Grovel for me.
26 fucking years and nothing had changed. Cullen had said almost the exact same thing back in the tailor shop when they had both been 18. And this time, there was no imperial cousin to intervene or father to punish his own son for impudence. Oliver knew what he should do. He also knew he couldn't.
It's our fault, Your Grace,
a new voice intruded. Grarak's eight legs had dropped to approximate a human curtsy. Even with the sibilation, the abjection was obvious as she bowed and scraped.
Captain Randall!
She broke off abruptly as she realized that she no longer knew if that was his name.
Our captain wanted to inform League authorities, but we...
She gestured with her four appendage limbs indicating the rest of the crew.
Outvoted him.
She bowed her head almost to her knees.
We're a bad influence.
She then looked up and gave him a limpid look from those enormous faceted eyes. Her intentions were good, but humans had an instinctive recoil reaction to big spiders. Also, like Oliver, Cullen had been trained at the Academy to think of aliens in terms of their potential threat. Add to that, it was rare to see a Sidon off their harsh and rocky world, and a bad outcome was inevitable. Oliver could see the anger and disgust rising in Cullen's green eyes. He quickly stepped between them. For Grarak, for the rest of the crew, he would eat shit. It was the least he could do after lying to them for all these years. He gave a perfectly executed court bow.
Your Grace, I most humbly beg your pardon, My crew should not be punished for my lack of judgment.
He risked a quick glance at Cullen's face. Not enough. He swallowed bile.
Once again, you have schooled me in proper behavior, and I deeply appreciate it.
A smile curved those perfect lips. Lips that touched... Oliver recoiled from where that thought would lead him. Cullen slowly clapped.
Bravo, Belmanor. I enjoyed that.
He turned and walked to his shuttle, trailed by his officers and guards. The crew of the Selkie and her captain stood in the icy darkness and watched the fire of the shuttle's engines melt the ice. It dwindled to a star and vanished into the bay of the frigate in orbit above them.
"Old friend of yours?"
Baca asked, irony dripping off every word.
"And he took our loader,"
Grarak said mournfully. The crew began heading toward the Selkie, dejection etched in every line of their tired bodies. The chances of them ever stumbling across another Karaat ship were astronomical.
"What did he do to you that you hate him so?"
Jahan asked quietly. She had used a private channel so the others wouldn't hear.
"I don't want to discuss it."
She shrugged, a suit-yourself gesture, and headed for the ship. Oliver stood by the derelict, feeling as empty and abandoned as the ship. He married the woman I loved, the woman who broke my heart. 2. Is anything about you true? Oliver sat in the galley of the Selkie, staring into his coffee cup. Through the soles of his boots, he could feel the soft rumble of the engines as they made their way toward the edge of the solar system. There they could safely make the translation into fold. The tension on the bridge as he'd given orders had been displayed as a silence so deep it seemed a weight pressing on his skull. His normally garrulous crew had been voiceless automatons. He had left Baca and Jahan switching out the transponder, so if Cullen did report them, they couldn't be traced. Oliver had retreated to the galley. The coffee had long since gone cold. He took another sip. The liquid hit his acid-filled stomach and bile rose into the back of his throat. He stood and put the cup into the cocinar to reheat. He probably wouldn't drink it, but he needed something to occupy his hands during the upcoming confrontation. One by one, they entered. Baca's footfalls firm and loud, Dahlia's two hooves clip-clopping delicately on the floor, Grarak's eight claws clicking. Jack's was a soft rustling as he undulated into the room and took up a position in his pool of nutrient-fortified water. Jahan's furred and padded feet made no sound as she darted in and took the chair at the other end of the table. There were awkward, inconsequential conversational exchanges as coffee, tea, and the thick red bilge that Grarak liked to drink and snacks were obtained. Once everyone had settled, Jahan gave him a cold stare out of her huge eyes.
"Okay, Captain, so who are you, really?"
"An excellent question, Jahan. Wish I had an answer beyond the obvious." He sighed, spun the coffee mug, and finally said,
"My name is Thrasius Tracy Ransom Belmanor, formerly Captain Lieutenant Belmanor of His Imperial Majesty's Star Command."
"I thought you were just an hombre, a grunt like me," Luis yelped. "You were a fucking officer?"
"Afraid so."
"Only Aristos, fucking Fortune 500 pukes, get to go to the high ground,"
Baca raged.
"That officer called the captain an intitulato,"
Jax fluted.
"That means untitled, so he's not FFH.
"I was a scholarship student,"
Tracy said.
"Best tell us everything, sir,"
Grarak hissed softly. Tracy sighed, began.
"I was born on Oranos. My father is a tailor in the capital. I grew up for the most part in the capital city, Hiselic. I was given a full ride to the high ground. I graduated, served about 6 years, and then I got court-martialed. That's the story."
He shrugged and took a sip of the coffee.
"Why did they court-martial you?"
Dahlia asked. Her large eyes were fixed, unblinking on him, and she was absently running her hand back and forth along the length of her blackened red mane.
Did it have to do with that story you told us about those half-Kara'at children?
Grarak asked shrewdly.
Indirectly, yes. They trumped up charges, said that I stole from Otrell.
So, you did kill kids,
Louis said. His tone was stony.
No!
Again, too loud and too sharp. He moderated his tone.
That part was true. I protected them until cooler heads prevailed. The Crown wanted to bury the story. They might have been half-breeds, but the citizens wouldn't have reacted well to stories of children being butchered. I tried to get it out, go public. They found a way to stop me.
He shrugged again.
As they say, never bet against the house.
And this man who confronted us? Jahan said.
And stole from us?
Luis added aggrievedly. Jahan's tail twitched in irritation.
Sorry,
the comm officer muttered. Jahan looked back to Tracy.
What is he to you, and is he likely to become a problem for us?
Of its own volition, his hand went to the scar on his left temple, the scar that pulled his eyebrow up, giving him a constantly sardonic look, the scar that Boho had bestowed on him. It was a great relief that none of his crew had twigged to the identity of their nemesis. How many more awkward and unanswerable questions would have been raised if the crew figured out that Cullen was the Imperial consort? If they had, Tracy would have had to lie to them again, and he really wanted to avoid that routine.
Oh, shit,
Luis breathed.
You didn't get that in a sorry engineering accident. That's a fucking dueling scar.
There was no point denying it. Tracy nodded.
Dios mio, is there anything about you that's true?
There didn't seem to be a good answer, so Tracy stayed silent. Into that accusatory quiet, Jahan spoke.
What is true is that he's a very good captain, that he has dealt fairly with all of us.
She turned her large eyes on Luis.
Gave you an extra share when your mother needed surgery.
A glance to Dahlia.
Let you have 7 months at home when your sister's pregnancy wasn't going well, and you still shared in the profits from those runs.
Let me buy an interest in the ship even though I'm an alien,
Jax offered. Tracy couldn't bear the fact they were forgiving him. He unlocked his chair, pushed it back, and stood.
Look, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have lied to you. But I didn't want to burden you with keeping my secret, and there's a lien against Thracius Belmanor. Otrell can garnish my income and any holdings until my debt is repaid. If you want me off the ship, I'll understand. There's no reason for the rest of you to be in danger because of me.
Oh, don't be ridiculous, Jahan snapped.
I would like to know how you came by the money to make the down payment on this ship,
Jack said. There were nods of agreement from the rest of the crew. Tracy gripped the back of the chair.
I'd gone looking for my Batbem. He was a Kara'at. I didn't realize that was the day they had all disappeared. I ended up in a Kara'at warehouse down at the Cristobal Colon spaceport. Fortunately, nobody else had twigged that they were gone either. I appropriated some goods.
Goods like these?
Jahan asked as she reached into the pocket of her coveralls and pulled out a handful of vials. There was a gasp of reaction from the assembled crew.
You were goddamn lucky that officer didn't order all of us searched.
Tracy exploded at his XO. She shrugged in that boneless way of the Asanjo.
I figured they wouldn't want to risk alien cooties. And you're welcome. There's enough medicine here to get us at least a modest payday. But back to you. Why did you steal?
His wince made her grin, exposing her long canines.
Oh, excuse me, appropriate, Ollie, Thracius.
She gave her head an irritated shake.
My God, that's a mouthful.
Use Tracy, that's what most people called me.
That's gonna take some getting used to,
Luis muttered.
Not medicine. I was on Oranos, in the capital.
The Kara'at weren't going to risk having contraband drugs around, but there were a lot of luxury items. I took a
sample complete. Ready to continue?